And I like the theme that it's like, you could be stuck in something that feels safe and it's easy, right? And it can still be the thing that's not right for you. And you could know that it's not the right thing for you. And so many people do that with their lives. And they'll get the job that seems like a good idea, or they'll get together with the person that seems like it's a good idea, but is that the thing that's really going to bring them joy and happiness and fulfillment in their life? And it's about like taking that risk because there's too many mediocre things in life.
Welcome to My Movie Story. I'm your host, Brian McAleer. This is the podcast where we dive into the movies that have shaped us. Each episode, we sit down with a special guest to discuss their all-time favorite film, the movie that changed their life, and the one film they think everyone needs to see. Get ready as we journey through the cinematic worlds that make us who we are. This is My Movie Story. My guest for this episode is Jana Willoughby-Law. Jana is an artist, poet, musician, and entrepreneur from Buffalo, New York. Her company, Papercraft Miracles, specializes in handcrafted paper art that brings meaning to people's lives. She was awarded the Women in Manufacturing Award from Business First in 2023. She is the host of Reach the Stars podcast, which features inspiring stories of persistence, passion, and purpose. Jana is also a mum to three little kiddos and likes bright colors, giggling, and things that are small. Now, here's our interview with Jana. Well, hey, movie lovers. Welcome to My Movie Story and welcome, Jana, to the podcast. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Very well. Thanks for being with us today. And it's great to have you join us all the way from the United States. Which part of America are you in?
I am in Buffalo, New York.
Buffalo. Oh, right. Nice one. Yeah, I've been there once before and to do the Niagara Falls thing and all of that. So yeah, it's a nice part of the state for sure. Yeah, and how can I ask how close you are to Niagara Falls? Can you see it from your window, or is it like a bit of a drive?
I can't quite see Niagara Falls from my window, but I can see across the river to Canada from
Oh,
my
nice.
window.
Right, so
So
literally a
we're
stone's
pretty
throw.
close. Like Niagara Falls, New York is about 15, 20 minutes from where we live. So we're like kind of smack dab in the middle of the city, but we're right on the water. So.
Nice. Oh, fantastic. And being a local, do you still go and visit Niagara Falls, or is it just kind of like it's just there and we know it's there, but do you still go and see it? Because obviously it gets heaps of tourists, so it's always busy. Yeah.
We go sometimes, but honestly, like the Canadian side is really nice. So like it's a totally different view, obviously, from Canada. So it's more of an experience for us to like go see it from Canada. But there's an amusement park that is kind of in between where we live and Niagara Falls, so we go there more often instead of going to
I think that's where I've
we
been
go to
as
the
well.
park.
It's got like a haunted house and that sort of stuff. Is that right? Is that an Ferris
Yeah,
wheel?
it used to be called Fantasy Island, and now it's like Niagara Amusement Center or something like that. But it's still everybody still calls it Fantasy Island, and I think it still has a sign that says Fantasy Island. So
No,
it's kind of
it's an
like a bummer.
amazing sight. It really is. Yeah, I've been twice actually. I just realized I've been twice. So the first time I went, I did the Canadian side, and yeah, I remember that being much more scenic and everything. So yeah, definitely a bucket list item for sure. Yeah, and tell us a bit about yourself, Jana. Your business and what do you do? I know you've got your own podcast as well. So yeah, tell us a bit about yourself.
Sure. So I own a company called Papercraft Miracles, and it's an eco-friendly handmade paper art company, and we make magical things out of paper that make people happy.
Nice.
So we do handmade papers, paper flowers, hand-bound books and journals, and book repair, and then we also make lots of plantable seed paper and seed bombs that grow when you plant them in the ground.
Very nice. Yeah.
So
And has
we
that
do
been
a
sort
lot
of
of different things.
a big part of your background, like arts and crafts based stuff? Like that's always been a thing for you?
Yeah, since I was a kid, my mom did paper crafting, and so we always had rubber stamps and collage stuff and things like that around the house. And so I was always gluing things together, and I was a big fan of adhesive ever since I was a kid. So I did that for ages and went to college to be a poet. Actually, I had started writing poetry when I was 5 and had continued doing it and started doing performing and doing poetry slam and touring around a little bit.
Fantastic.
So went to college for that, and then I ended up taking all these classes in paper making and book binding at the college I went to, even though I didn't know you could take classes in that when I got there. And I just fell in love with the art form and how you can incorporate so many things with it. And I could put my poems into these books that I was making, and I could just kind of combine all these different art forms together. And paper is so versatile. I
Oh
love it.
yeah,
It's like it's so
absolutely.
different from any other art form, and I just fell in love with it. So
Awesome.
I made up my own college major to put
Fantastic.
entrepreneurial business and creative art together, and that's how I came up with my business.
Fantastic. Getting to do what you love and as a job and yeah, connecting with other people. So that's a pretty good deal. Yeah, and with your poetry, have you got something you could share with us now, like a quick poem that you could recite or.
Okay, I'll read this one. It's called "The Moon Is Out There." Sometimes when I look up through the skylight in my bathroom, the moon is there, bold, bright, inviting. And it's easy to see my way around the toys and piles of clothes on the floor at night. And then there's days where the moon must be on the other side of the sky, and it's so dark that I helplessly press the side button on my phone to light it up enough so I don't bash my toes into the door frame on my way back to bed. And then there's days where I expect the darkness, try to memorize the maze while the light is still on so I can see it in my mind's eye once I've gone and switched it off. But then I look up towards the skylight, expecting to just see faded black, and I'm reminded that the moon is out there somewhere, not quite in my view, giving me a glint of guidance to make my way through the dark.
Ooh, I like it. I like it. Very vivid. Yeah, I could sort of picture all of that and this big bright moon shining through the house and everything. Very cool. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah.
I like to write poems that like sound like they're about one thing, but really they're about so much more than that.
That's right. Yeah, it's a bit of a surprise. Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, and you've got your own podcast as well. What's that called and where could people check it out if they wanted to check it out?
It is called Reach the Stars Podcast. You can listen to it on all of the podcast platforms, and on YouTube you can watch the videos. I have it all linked on my business website at papercraftmiracles.com/reachthestarspodcast. Or if you just go to the website, click the media tab, you'll see the podcast in
Awesome.
there.
Excellent. We'll
See you on
definitely
YouTube.
share the links and people can go and check out a bit more about what you do. So very cool, very interesting background and a really smart way of, putting craft and creativity together. That's really cool. So yeah, thank you for sharing. And you've got three very different films that we're going to talk about today. So let's get into that. So the first film we're going to talk about today is the film that you think everyone must see. And the great thing about this category is people watching and listening for the first time, we don't reveal the name of the title of the film before the episode. It's a bit of a mystery. So they never know what they're going to get. But I think we're going to please a few people right about now. So yeah, please tell us, what is this movie, Jana, that everyone must see and why?
I think everyone needs to see Wayne's World.
I love it.
It's Wade.
This is definitely the type of place I'm gonna get when I move out of my parents' house.
It's Garth.
I love you, God.
If she were a president, she'd be Abraham Lincoln.
It's a movie.
We're not worthy! We're not worthy!
Wayne's World.
Hi, Wayne.
It just might be the greatest motion picture ever made.
Are you mental?
Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me. For me.
I love this movie. I saw it in the theater when I was 10 years old, and then I saw it again in the theater on its 20th anniversary. Maybe 25th anniversary, actually. And it is so timeless, and it's like this perfect little 1992 time capsule kind of thing. And there is it didn't mean to, but this movie like defined our generation, because I'm pretty sure that you're in my generation.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I just turned 42. So yeah. But yeah, this movie, there are things and lines from this movie that you either get it or you don't. Like, you've seen it and right. you know, or you're missing the boat.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, very much. I'm same generation as you for sure. And I didn't get to see this film at the movies, but as soon as it came out on video, it was rented and watched 1,000 times. And yeah, you're right. It came out at a time where like our generation was looking for its Bill and Ted, I guess. Like Bill and Ted were kind of the 80s, you know, and then in the 70s you had like Cheech and Chong. So yeah, it was in the 90s. It was all about Wayne and Garth, right? And then in the 2000s, it's Harold and Kumar, and et cetera, et cetera. So there's all these like duos who kind of pop up, and these guys were great. Started off as a skit on SNL, Saturday Night Live. So were you sort of a fan of that back then, or did you just go straight to the movie?
I'd definitely seen it a couple of times on Saturday Night Live, but when it came out, I was only 10. Yep. So, you know, I wasn't regularly watching Saturday Night Live. Not every Saturday anyway.
Yeah.
But it just, you know, once you see Wayne and Garth together on that Davenport in the basement, like
that's it.
It's just so many iconic lines that just changed the way that me and all of my friends and like everyone we know in our generation talk to each other.
Absolutely. Yeah. And even before they open their mouths, you're laughing at them, you know, just the way that they look and their body language, the way they walk and stuff. It's just fantastic. Yeah. So for any new younger viewers who might be watching this who haven't seen Wayne's World, shame on you. But tell us the general story. Who is Wayne? What's going on in Wayne's World?
Okay. So Wayne Campbell is kind of a deadbeat, but he doesn't want you to know that. And he's like a wannabe rock star, but doesn't know much about playing an instrument either. And he loves to play hockey in the street with his friends. And he still lives with his parents. And it's kind of, you can't tell if he's supposed to be a teenager or if he's like 30, which is great, you know?
Yeah.
But he like, it makes fun of himself for living with his parents. He's like, I still live with my parents, which I admit is both bogus and sad. Like, it's great.
Yeah.
So Wayne's best friend is Garth Algar. And he is super weird, but also, you know, kind of heavy metal guy. They both have long hair and wear, you know, like ripped jeans and flannel shirts and Converse. And Garth is actually an excellent musician.
He is.
Excellent drummer. But he, like, it doesn't occur to Wayne that that he doesn't really know how to play guitar.
No, not at all. Yeah.
And
Garth's the quiet achiever, isn't he? Yeah.
Yes. So in Wayne's own words, they have this amazing public access show. They have a TV show that they do on public access TV that they record from Wayne's basement.
Yeah.
And they have quite the following of people who just love tuning in to watch them on this public access show. And they have, you know, a handful of other heavy metal guys who like help them produce this show and run the cameras and all that kind of stuff. And everybody's like, hey, Wayne, what's up? You know, like he's the cool guy. Everybody, he's kind of like the Ferris Bueller, you know, like
they all
cool,
love him.
He's
yeah.
confident, he's fun, and everybody likes him.
Yeah.
And the plot of the movie is that they have this show and there's this, there's this big kind of snooty ass corporate guy who is tasked with finding somebody who can be like, you know, a patsy for this scheme that he has. And so he offers to pay them to do Wayne's World and to like produce the show in a big TV studio.
Yeah.
But they end up like changing it. And making it lose all of the authentic charm about it. And then, you know,
that's it.
You know, it's a whole thing of like, they have to get their show back from the bad guy, Benjamin. Like,
yeah, that's right. Played by Rob Lowe, who just like oozes that kind of sleazy, you know,
perfectly
bronze skin kind of guy. Yeah, he plays it really well. And then, of course, there's Cassandra, you know, Abraham Lincoln, if she was president. So he meets her, and then, you know, obviously a bit of a romance develops.
So they go to see this Cassandra's band, and they heard that her band was great, but and they heard that there's this chick bass player and she's amazing, whatever. And they go and see this heavy metal band fronted by this gorgeous Cantonese woman. And they walk in, and immediately, even though she's playing heavy metal, Wayne doesn't hear anything except Dreamweaver.
Yeah, that's it.
And you can just hear like Dreamweaver.
Yep.
Believe you can get me through the night. You know, like that's one of those things that like so many people in my generation, they'll like meet a new person and like they'll hear that in their head and start laughing.
They'll just hear that song in your head. Absolutely. Yeah, it's that's the thing with this movie is like there's so many, like you said, so many iconic little scenes and touches and dialogue that are just worked their way into the, you know, into the common lexicon. And I think that Mike Myers, obviously, who created Wayne Campbell plays Wayne, he's really good at that, creating these characters that just break through and you never forget them. Like it was Wayne Campbell, obviously Austin Powers, he did it as well, had lots of success with that. The voice of Shrek. Later on, he tried to do it again with The Love Guru. Worst film ever made. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it needs to be flushed down the toilet. But yeah, like that was his skill. Like he made these really lovable characters. And yeah, are you sort of a fan of his other stuff as well? Or is it all about Wayne's World for you?
Yeah, some of it, but it's just, you know, none of it will ever top the original Wayne's World. Like it just, you can't. It's
definitely not.
It is so iconic.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, and the sequel, did you like the second one? Is it kind of more of the same, or was it its own thing? What did you think?
The second one's all right. It's all right, but it's not... I think it tried too hard to be, you know, as cool as the first one. And it just... The best part about the first one is that it was so ridiculous.
Yeah,
you know, and it was just like it was what it, you know, it is what it is, and you can't improve on perfection, you know, like
you can't, yeah,
you know, they could not do a remake and it would not be better, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, no, oh, hopefully not. And I know there was sort of rumors of a third one, and I remember back in the 2018 or 2019 Oscars when, you know, Rami Malek won for Bohemian Rhapsody, which is about Queen. And of course, Queen features in Wayne's World in classic fashion. And then Mike Myers and Dana Carvey come out to present an award. And I think they were either dressed as Wayne and Garth, or they were at some awards show around that time where they showed up as Wayne and Garth. And then the internet went crazy and it's like, Wayne's World 3, right? Because they did a Bill and Ted 3. So they're like, they've got to bring Wayne and Garth back. So maybe it could work. I don't know. I mean, they're very much trapped in the 90s. So how would they do it? It would be interesting, but you never know. We'll see. Hey, watch this space.
You have to see if Wayne's still living in his parents' house.
He's still living in his parents' basement. Yeah. Like the recession hit him hard and he had to move back home or something like that. Yeah.
Right. You know, Cassandra's
left him and all this. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he already had this extensive collection of name tags and hairnets.
Yeah, that's it.
Nothing the opening scene.
I love his narration in the movies. It's great because he's talking straight to the camera. And I like the scene in Makita's, you know, that diner that they hang out in, and Ed O'Neill's behind the counter, the guy who works there 24 hours a day. And he starts talking to the camera and Wayne's like, what are you doing? Only Garth and I can talk to the camera. And then like the camera like pans away from him. He's like, oh. Okay, so yeah. So it's great. Yeah. It's a very self-aware film. It knows it's a movie, but it's just a lot of fun, isn't it? Yeah.
It's hilarious. Yeah. Just so many iconic lines that I say all the time.
Yeah.
I remember once a friend of mine was dating this guy and she tried to break up with him and he like wouldn't get the point, like Stacy. And she tried real hard and she was very specific and he just kept showing up. And I told her, and I was like, you should just text him. Like, are you mental? We broke up. Get the net.
That's it. Like any situation in life, there's something from Wayne's World you can quote. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, so like good. If someone tells you that they love you and you don't really love them back, like, what do you say? You say, thank you.
That's right.
You can say I love you and then they'll be like, no, no, you don't, man. And they'll try to hug you and it'll be weird. So you just say, yeah, thank you. And then they just stop.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. I know I'm guilty of one of the lines I quote, which is probably a little inappropriate, is when they're ordering Chinese food. And Wayne says, yeah, I won't repeat what he says, but yeah, I've done that before where I've ordered some, when I've been around with people and they're like, let's order some Chinese food or whatever. And then I've said, yeah, I'll have the, you know, and then a few people look at me like, hang on, what did you just say? Like Wayne's World.
So many of those jokes too that, you know, the first time I saw it, I was like 10 years old and I didn't really get them. And then there's other times, like once I watched it again later, I was like, oh, that's why that part's funny. You know,
yeah,
like,
that's it. The jerks work on lots of different levels.
Which guy in the new big huge TV studio is going to be given the hand cues and stuff like that. Like, it's right. Like, I believe I requested the hand job. Like, it's so funny.
It's great. It's great. So smart. So well written. And it's just, it's always funny no matter how many times you watch it. Yeah, it's brilliant. Brilliant. Good old Wayne's World. All right. Well, we might move to the next movie, if that's okay, Jana. And this is now the movie that you said we're going to change direction a lot here. So, you know, maybe not a laugh out loud film, but that's okay. It's still important. So this one is the film that you said changed your life or changed your perspective in some way. It's a little known, I guess, art house sort of independent film from the 90s. Another film that I've been introduced to and never knew existed. Anyway, tell us, please, what is this film and what's it all about?
It's called Dream for an Insomniac.
Step aside, Cindy, because there is a new sheriff in town.
So you're gay. Stop being such a pussy. God, why do you have to say that word? You know that I hate that word.
Not nearly as much as I do.
You need a good wife. You know that, don't you?
I'm too young to get married.
You were all pussies. Vagina. I mean, can't you just say vagina if you have to say anything, please?
Is it just me or are we having a Brady Bunch moment here?
Just not the P word. You know, like, my grandmother, you know, she used to call it a fifi. I mean, isn't that nice?
I'm sorry, but that just does not work for me.
Eddie Vedder is very much like Bono was a decade ago.
Eddie Vedder will never turn into the spectacle that Bono has become.
Who's Eddie Vedder?
Scared of that.
Do you know how disgruntled workers shoot people in the post office? This place is next.
It is amazing. Mm. It has Ione Skye in it and Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, very young Jennifer Aniston, yeah.
Oh my God, what is that guy's name?
Mackenzie Astin, I think.
Yes, Mackenzie Astin, that's right. And so it centers around this cafe that is called Cafe Blue Eyes, and it's like a Frank Sinatra old school themed coffee shop in San Francisco. And the Ione Skye plays this woman named Frankie, whose parents were killed in a car accident when she was a little kid. And she hasn't slept properly her whole life.
Yep.
Because her parents are dead. And they used to sing her to sleep when she was little. And she was raised by her uncle, who owns the cafe.
Yep.
And her cousin works there. And so Jennifer Aniston's her best friend, and they're both aspiring actresses. And when the movie opens, they are moving to LA in like 4 or 5 days from the day that the movie starts. And so they're looking, the uncle is trying to hire someone to take her spot to work at the cafe because she's moving away. And he ends up hiring Mackenzie Astin, who shows up, and he gets hired when Frankie's not there. And then, you know, they meet, and the whole movie's in black and white until they meet. And then all of a sudden, like, his eyes are super blue, and then everything becomes color.
Yeah, and that was a really cool touch. I like that part. Yeah.
It really is cool. And this movie just has like perfection in the dialogue, and they spout quotes at each other from famous people back and forth. And
yeah, definitely.
It's very much that 90s, you know,
yep,
kind of art house style of just quoting amazing lines back and forth at each other. And
yeah,
it's a story of falling in love but still pursuing your passions.
Mm-hmm.
And not giving that up even though there's heartbreak involved.
Yeah.
And I just love the way that this movie plays out.
Yeah.
Where it has this very, very amazing theme. It's like you meet somebody and they definitely have that love at first sight type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then yep. trigger, you know, like not trigger warning, but like spoiler alert, right?
Yes.
He has a girlfriend.
Yep.
He has a longtime girlfriend who he doesn't say anything about, and they've been together a long time. He's a writer, she's going to law school, you know, they just have this safe relationship.
Yeah,
the two of them.
Yeah, very predictable.
And you know, it's safe, it's kind of boring, and then he meets Frankie and he's like, oh crap, like this is definitely what I want, but I'm, you know, in this relationship and I don't want to rock the boat and I don't want to do this and I don't want to do that. And you know, Frankie really pushes him
mm-hmm.
to be like, hey man, life is short, my parents are dead, and you know, like I know how fast it can go, like why would you waste your life with someone who doesn't fill you with joy as soon as you see them? And
mm-hmm.
you know, like that's the reason that this movie really changes people, I think,
because
one of my absolute favorite lines that she says to him in this movie, they're walking on the beach and she's moving out of town, they only known each other for like 3 days, and she's about to move out of town, and she says to him, you know, love, do you love her? And he goes, you know, I'm happy with her. And she goes, anything less than mad, passionate, extraordinary love is a waste of your time.
Right. Yeah.
There's too many mediocre things in life, and love shouldn't be one of them.
Yeah.
And it's really like,
wow,
damn, it's such a good line.
That's,
you know,
right. Like, yeah. Powerful. Very powerful. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. very well written. Yeah. You're right. 100%. And came out in 1994. So you and I were like 12, 13 years old at that time. Did you discover it then, or was it later in life?
I saw it later. I think I was probably, I don't know, 16 or 17, maybe. I saw it on VHS. I think I had it on VHS, rented it at Blockbuster. That's how old we are. But it's the first time I saw it, I was like, oh my God. Like I just, I was like, I want a blue eyes, you know, like to show up. You know,
yeah.
I was very much like this, because Frankie is just so, she's so moody and she can't sleep and she drinks coffee all day long and she's kind of bitchy and like she just, you know, everything, she's goth, right? Like she doesn't dress goth, but she's very like that kind of attitude and very defeatist. And she gets up every morning. Her cousin lives across the alley, and she gets up every morning and opens her window and throws marbles at his window to get him to come out. And he opens the window, and then she will give him, you know, the quote of the day. That's always something that's like really morose and stuff
that's
like
right.
that.
Yeah.
And he's trying to like guess who said it. And she's like, no, whatever. And people keep setting her up on dates, and she's like, no, I could never date this guy. He has brown eyes, you know?
she's so obsessive about things. Absolutely. Which is probably a big, you know, a side effect of the fact that she's an insomniac. I mean, if you're not getting regular sleep every night, then you're going to be drinking coffee every day. You're going to be edgy. You're going to be agitated. And my sort of interpretation of the film is, you know, it starts off in black and white, like you said. And I didn't know it was going to change to color. So I'm like, oh, cool. That was a nice touch. And it's like the second that this guy walks in, you know, with the dreamy blue eyes, and he smiles at her, and then her face lights up and it instantly changes to color. So kind of a bit of symbolism there, maybe. Like it's like there's now finally some brightness in her life. This guy's just walked in off the street, and I thought that was really cool, and it sort of signified her change almost in an instant, when she's like, oh my God, this guy's, you know, he's sharing quotes and mottos and poetry like me, and he knows them as well as me, and they're like made for each other, you know. And then obviously that's where things get interesting. And of course, it's got a young Jennifer Aniston in it. And this is pre-Friends, I think. Friends started in 96. Is that right? Does that sound
I think
about right?
so, yeah.
Yeah,
I think so,
94.
yeah.
But she's definitely got the Rachel hairdo.
Yeah.
She's hanging out in a coffee shop. So I'm wondering if this film is almost kind of like a, you know, almost like an audition for Friends. They probably saw her in that movie and they're like, oh, there's Rachel, you know. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
That could be sort of how she got helped her get the part maybe. But, yeah, and I guess your connection to it, you know, you said you sort of saw it as a teenager and everything. What is it about this film that really grabbed your attention and it stayed with you for all these years as well? So what is it about this film that makes it so special for you?
I mean, it's really about like seizing the day, but also that, you know, Frankie, all that she's ever known in her whole life is living in San Francisco and living with her uncle and being in this cafe. And she has dreams of being an actress and moving to LA. And she's like, you know what? I'm going to do it. And she takes that risk. And even though she meets this guy that she knows immediately, like he's the one, but I'm not going to give up my dream to stay here with, you know, and try to get a guy who has a girlfriend. She's like, I'm not doing that. I'm still going to do my thing. And, you know, I'll tell him everything that I'll try to convince him that he should come with me, even though he just, you know, has this job. But that she's like, you should come with me and pursue your dreams. And I believe in you. And if you're with somebody who doesn't believe in your dreams, you know, get out of there.
That's right.
And
because he's a struggling writer, isn't he? He's trying to be a writer.
Yeah, he's a struggling writer and he has writer's block.
Yep.
And she's like, I'll bet you that I can inspire you. Give me one night and I'll inspire you. And he says, I bet I can put you to sleep. And she's like, okay, well, you try to put me to sleep and tomorrow I'll take you out all night long and I'll inspire you and you'll want to write after that. And you know, he does not put her to sleep. She stays awake all night and he falls asleep and she stays up reading all night long. And then she takes him out the next night and like they go and do all these amazing things and it's like the best date on earth, right?
Yep.
And she's like showing him all these amazing inspiring things and then the next day she moves to LA and he, as he's, you know, goes back to his regular safe life with his girlfriend who he obviously doesn't really love, but you know, feels she's been taking care of him. She's going to be a lawyer. They have what looks good on paper.
Sure.
And
yep.
He says something to her about like, hey, do you want to go get sushi? Because he had gone and gotten sushi with Frankie and he'd never really had it before. And his girlfriend is like, ew, sushi, gross. You know, when'd you have that? And he's like, I gotta go. And like, that's the thing that he's
that's
just
it.
Like, oh, wow. Like, she's not even willing to try new food or something like that. Like, she doesn't really like anything about me. And he bails and he goes to LA and he finds her. And it's not because she gives up her dreams for the dude. And I think that for me, that is key to this movie. Like, she's in LA, she's heartbroken, right? But she does it anyway.
Yep.
And she goes to pursue her dream and does her thing. And really, like, Jennifer Aniston's out doing all these, you know, auditions and she's sitting at home wallowing because she's very Frankie. But, you know, she doesn't give up what she wants. She waits for the guy to figure his own shit out. And like,
that's great. Yeah,
you know,
put on it. Yeah. And being obviously being wanting to be an actress, she has to go to LA. That's the scene she needs to be on and everything. And he's a writer, meaning he can write anywhere, really, in a cafe, on a bus, wherever he's living, right? So it kind of works, you know, like they can both be in the same place, both achieving their dreams. And they've got that connection that he just didn't have with his girlfriend who is wanting to be a lawyer and is very pragmatic and very black and white and everything. So I guess it's a nice story about how people eventually can find each other. And yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah, and I like the theme that it's like, you know, you could be stuck in something that feels safe and it's easy, right? And it can still be the thing that's not right for you. And you could know that it's not the right thing for you. And so many people do that with their lives. Yeah. And they'll get the job that seems like a good idea, or they'll get together with the person that seems like it's a good idea, but you know, is that the thing that's really going to bring them joy and happiness and fulfillment in their life? And it's about like taking that risk.
Yep.
Because there's too many mediocre things in life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Know? Right.
It shouldn't be one of them.
For sure. I mean, if the pandemic has taught us anything, it's like, you know, nothing is for sure in life. There's no 100% certainty in anything. Like we saw that, we all lived through it. Right. And you found in that time, people were like really started to reevaluate their lives and think about, well, what do I want to do when we come out of this, you know, when we eventually get out of it, you know, and some people have been able to make that change for themselves, which is great. And it's hard, you know, and it's the good thing about movies is like, it shows you that it is possible to change your life. Sometimes it takes, you know, a guy to walk into the cafe to help you realize that. And, or it's the, you know, the woman, the free spirited woman who helps the guy realize you're, you know, you're with the wrong woman and all that. So yeah, sometimes it takes that person to come in who you think might be like challenging you, but is ultimately the person who's going to help you to break free. Yeah.
And all the great lines. I mean,
Lots of good dialogue.
Oh, the banter. It's like, it's just magical the way that they're just spouting these quotes back and forth to each other from famous people that are so pertinent to the situation. And they're like having a conversation only through spitting quotes back and forth at each other and trying to guess who said that. And yeah, I just,
that's right.
I just love it. You know, and he's like, oh, who said that? And she's like, he just made it up. And he's like, well, it's really good. You know?
Yeah, and very reflective of the times, I guess, like in the early 90s, this was pre-internet. And, you know, so they were probably reading books more than they were watching TV and watching movies. And as I was watching that scene, I was thinking, like, if this was made today, they'd be sort of probably shouting movie quotes at each other or something, or quotes from TV or something. But I really like the fact that they're all really sort of arty people and they're intelligent and, you know, they're just really good, well-rounded characters. Like they, and all the actors play the parts really well. I think you believe that, you know, the chemistry between them is great. Like it's kind of like you're just sitting in there at the table watching this conversation happen. Like it's really it's done in a really natural way, which is great, which makes it really watchable. Yeah. Mm.
I also really like that although this movie came out in 1994, that her cousin is gay and he's closeted in the movie. Yep. And I really appreciate the fact that they put that in the movie and that it's central and that he's really worried that, you know, his father's going to find out, and his father knows. And he keeps trying to set him up with girls to get him to say, Hey, I'm gay. I live with a guy, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And he's just so terrified to be himself. And he finally comes out and tells his dad, and he's like, I mean, you know, I already knew that for a long, long time, you know, like his dad's very Italian and whatever.
That's right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's like, I just give you a little push. And then, you know, then you spill it to bees. Right. Like,
yeah.
And what I love that they build that in, that, you know, like that was a big part of the early 90s, and it was, you know, terrifying for people to come out, and so many people were disowned by their friends and their family and still are. And I just think it was pretty ballsy for them to put that as one of the central characters and one of the central themes of that movie is like, you know, a dad saying, it's cool, I already know. Like,
yeah, no, it's great. It's great. Yeah. Very ahead of its time, you know. And it's interesting. Like, I mean, we grew up in that time, so we remember what it was like. And homophobia was very strong, and, you know, it still is. And it was really hard for people to come out, you know. And obviously, in more recent years, it's easier for people to come out now. There's more support in place, and there's more open-mindedness. So yeah, if you told a young person today, like back in the 90s, that's what it was like, they might think, oh God, that sounds terrible. You know, like it's very easy for today's young people to say, oh, you guys in the 90s and 80s, you had it so easy. You know, it looks so nostalgic, you know, and I wish I could go and live in that time. And then we have to say, yeah, there was cool things about it. You know, we were the pre-internet generation and the pre-mobile phone generation, but there were still challenges back in those days. There was still like things like that where it was hard for someone to come out, you know? So every generation's got its pros and cons, I think. And yeah, but this film kind of finds that that middle ground where it's like, we're going to be a bit more progressive here and explore this topic. So yeah, I think it was a nice touch. Yeah.
It's such a great movie.
Okay, so we've just got one more film to talk about now, Jana, and it is your all-time favorite. And this is a film with a very iconic title. A lot of people will probably recognize it once you say the title. I don't know how many people have actually seen it. It'd be interesting to hear. I know I first watched it as a kid and then again recently for this podcast. So, yeah, there's a lot to talk about with this film. It's an interesting movie. So, yeah, please tell us the name of this film and why is it your all-time favorite?
Well, this movie is called Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe.
Yep.
Academy Award winner Kathy Bates.
Well, I got mad, and it felt terrific.
Tawanda!
Tawanda!
And Academy Award winner Jessica Tandy.
How many of them hormones you taking, honey?
You didn't kill Aunt now, did you?
Not yet.
I feel better because all these people will live as long as you remember. Friends. Best friends.
I actually read the book first before I saw it as a movie.
Okay.
And the book is excellent.
Yep.
It's excellent.
Is that a book you would have read in high school? Or was that like a high school book? Or...
I didn't read it for school. No. My mom had it, or my stepmom had it, or somebody was like, oh, this is such a good book, you got to read it. So then I read the book and then I saw that they had the movie and I was like, oh, I'm gonna watch this movie.
I mean, yeah.
It's a really interesting setup for the way this movie and this book were put together, because it starts out with there's these characters and you really don't know why you know about them, which is cool. And it ends up the main character of the movie in the present is Kathy Bates.
Yep.
This woman whose character's name is Evelyn Couch.
Yep.
Exactly. And she's very much like this kind of like heavyset homemaker who has just, you know, lived to be a homemaker, and she's miserable, and she's starting to go through menopause, and she's really just like having a rough go of it. She's on the struggle bus.
Yeah.
And
a pretty lousy husband.
You know, she's got a, you know, he's not terrible, but he's, you know, typical husband, right?
Sure.
And she has been going to the nursing home to visit her husband's aunt, I believe.
Yeah.
In the nursing home. And then while she's there, the aunt like hates her and is always like cruel to her and is just like being mean to her, but she still shows up and, you know, hey, how's it going? You know, like tries to show up and like be the good person and visit this lady in the old folks' home. And while she's there, she ends up having a conversation with this woman, and who she's not related to at all, and this woman ends up telling her the story of her family and where she came from, and the bulk of the story is about this woman's family and Ninny. Her name is Ninny Threadgood. And her, it's weird because like in the story you never, like when the story goes back in time, when you see, you know, her family members when they're young, Ninny's never in the story.
Yeah,
she's all like, you never know who her character is or how she's quite related to everybody. Yeah,
that's right.
She's just in it, right? And like so it's always kind of magical where you're hearing this story where she's talking about Iggy Threadgood, and who is a total tomboy, and she doesn't follow any of the conventions of what little girls should be, and then she grows up and she doesn't follow any of the conventions of what grown-up ladies should be. And she pushes the envelope, and she, you know, hangs out with the guys, and she plays poker, and she, you know, great. Doesn't care about any of that kind of stuff, and nobody messes with her.
That's it.
And she ends up meeting this woman named Ruth Jameson, and they become immediate fast friends, and Ruth is very ladylike. She is the ultimate lady, and Ruth is married to this abusive jerk who beats the crap out of her. And Iggy ends up helping Ruth escape her abusive husband, and they start this cafe. Well, Ruth starts the cafe making fried green tomatoes, and Iggy can't cook for crap, but you know, she's the one that like brings all the people together at, you know, to have them come to this cafe. And it's just very central story of the Threadgoods have all these friends who are Black, and this is like way back in the day in the South, and you know, it's very much segregated, and so, you know, there's Klan members all over the place in this movie, and this Iggy and her family are pushing the envelope on that, and they're like, this is wrong, and you know, calling out the people and like pulling their hoods off and saying, this is this guy who works with you, and you know he's doing this, this is
not okay. So brave, weren't they? So brave.
And I think that like they don't come right out and say it in the movie, but I think there are like undertones that Iggy and Ruth are involved in a lesbian relationship. They don't say it like that, but they very much love each other. In this movie.
And there's definitely an attraction there. Yeah.
And the way that Ninny tells the story about her family changes Evelyn's life. And Evelyn is like so wrapped up in the story. And before she starts learning about the Threadgoods, she's like stuffing her face with candy bars, and she's super depressed, and you know, doesn't do any of the things that she wants to do. And after she starts learning about them, she really one of my kids is coming in here. she starts learning about the Threadgoods, and she decides that she wants to have a career, and she wants to start exercising, and she like starts selling Mary Kay, and she just really comes out of her shell.
Yeah, she really does. It's a terrific performance.
It really is. And you know, she does all sorts of things where she'll like tell her husband like cook your own dinner or whatever, you know. I'm like, she's just like changes their relationship. But there's one scene where she's in her car she's about to park at the grocery store, and these young girls in a convertible zip in and steal the spot right in front of her, and she's like,
hey,
you know,
I was waiting for that.
You know, hey, I'm waiting for that spot. And it's, you know, it's ever the story of the middle-aged woman where like the young woman comes in and swoops out of, you know, and like steals your thunder, and you know, you're invisible. And she ends up ramming the crap out of their car with her car, smashing their car to and screaming Tawanda in the middle of the parking lot while she's like backing up over and over and smashing their car out of the way.
That's right.
The girls come out of the grocery store and they're like, what are you doing? And because the girls had said to her, you know, we're younger and faster than you. Or, you know, we're younger and prettier than you. When they went in the store, and they come out and she goes, I'm older and I have more insurance.
That's like, a great line. She just drives off and then
and she just drives off with her groceries, you know.
It's fantastic. And this is a really multi-layered film, like, because it deals with a lot of different issues, you know. And it starts off with the girl when she's a child, and she witnesses that tragic accident involving Chris O'Donnell, who's in it for about 5 minutes, and then and then it jumps to her as a young woman, and then it goes back and forth to Kathy Bates's character visiting Jessica Tandy at the hospital. And yeah, this was a couple of years after they had both won Oscars, I think. So Jessica Tandy won for Driving Miss Daisy, and then Kathy Bates won for Misery, which is like one of the best performances ever. But she completely different character here. Like I was, Kathy Bates, like she's such a good actress, and you see her really evolve. Like you said, she gets so wrapped up in the story, and it helps her be, courageous and become this free spirit and everything. And then in the background of the other story, in the past, there's also a bit of a mystery to it as well. And a bit of a disclaimer here, for anyone watching or listening, spoilers ahead. but yeah, we chatted about this before, and I think it's worth mentioning. But yeah, we are going to reveal a few spoilers. So, just on that note, do you want to talk a little bit about this sort of murder mystery that's a part of the story as well?
Yeah, so Ruth's abusive ex-husband Frank is really terrible. Not only is he a Klansman, but he's also a wife beater. And it's just awful. And like throws her down the stairs when she's pregnant, and it's like really he's horrible.
Oh yeah,
And
psychopath.
he is always threatening to come and take the baby away, because Ruth has the baby after she gets away. And he comes to take the baby one night, and Sipsy, and so there's two characters, Sipsy and Big George, who are the technically they're the cooks at the restaurant, but they're also very close family friends with the Threadgoods. And Sipsy is Big George's mother, and she is watching the baby while there's like a big town hall, like a I don't know, a variety show is going on. And so most of the people in town are at the variety show, and Sipsy is staying home watching Ruth's baby. And Frank shows up drunk trying to take the baby. And Sipsy, you don't know the whole time who does it, like who kills Frank, but Sipsy ends up hitting Frank in the head with the frying pan from the cafe, and she kills Frank. And then they push his truck into the lake, and Frank just disappears. And it's kind of hinted that they cut him up and they cook him in the barbecue in the
Yeah, that's right.
movie.
Yeah. They cut straight to George on the barbecue, like chopping big chunks of meat, and you're like, oh, okay. Now we're
Right, but they never,
diving into cannibalism as well. This movie's got everything,
Right. And like they never explicitly say that that's what they did with Frank, but they also don't say that's what they did with Frank. And they put Iggy on trial for killing Frank Bennett because she was the last person seen with him, and she said, if you ever come near her again, I'll kill you.
Yeah, that's
And
right.
so they have this whole trial where nobody wants to convict Iggy because everybody knows that Frank is horrible or was horrible, and they don't really want to convict anyone of murdering him. But Iggy knows that it was Sipsy and knows that if it comes out what really happened, that she'll probably have no problem, and because of who she knows and because she's a young white lady, she's not going to go to jail for it. But if it came out that it was Big George or it was Sipsy, that they would be put to death. And she was like, that's not, I'm not having that happen. So she is found not guilty by a jury of her peers
Yeah, definitely. It's great.
because she can prove that she was at she was at the variety show, and didn't she wasn't there, she didn't do it.
That's it. And I mean, the police officer that initially accused her, he was just looking for to nail somebody. Like somebody had to take the fall, right? And the law back then was pretty corrupt, and it was obviously this was a white man that had been murdered, and obviously that took priority, and it was like we're going to blame somebody for it, right? And that's what they tried to do with her. And no, she sort of never took any crap from anybody. She was such a great character. Yeah, this I mean, there's so many films out there that we all love, and you know, it's no one really ever just has one favorite. We've got several, but for the sake of this show, you had to choose one. So what makes this one stand out for you? Why is this one of your all-time favorites?
I mean, it just has so the running theme of women being strong and powerful and sticking it to the man in the past and in the future, and that they're, you know, because of these amazing women, they are changing the world, and they're breaking down barriers of racism and sexism and homophobia and you know, just general conventions of what is expected of a woman. And you know, Itchy's like, I don't care if you think I should wear a dress, I'm not doing it when I was a kid and I'm not doing it now. And you know, like that she was doing that in the 20s and you know, drinking beer and playing poker with the guys, and you know, that she was so genuinely true to who she was as a person, and that she wasn't gonna let anybody tell her how to live her life. And
she's a real breath of fresh air, isn't she?
Yeah, and there's this like kind of magical theme of the fact that you never know by the end of the movie if Iggy's still alive or not. And she, they call her the bee charm. She's the bee charmer because she could walk up to the tree with bees all around it and reach her hand in covered in bees and pull out the honey, and she doesn't get stung at all.
I know, it's an amazing theme there. I always wondered how they filmed that. That was pretty cool.
I mean, she, whoever was the stunt person was the bee charmer, you know, like could do that. And, you know, it's just amazing because at the very end of the movie, Ninny gets out of the nursing home and, you know, she's healthy enough to go home, and she goes back to Whistle Stop and her home has been bulldozed and her home isn't there.
Yep.
And she goes with Evelyn, and Evelyn says, you can come and live with me. And she takes this woman into her home because this woman changed her whole life.
Yep.
And while they're, you know, out looking for her house, when before they find out that it's torn down, she says, you know, is Iggy still alive? And she goes, oh, I think so. And she's like, you know, maybe we'll see her. Maybe we'll see her today.
Yeah.
And she's like, maybe we will. And it's just, you know, it gives you this kind of feeling like that the superhero who is Iggy Threadgood, like, never dies. You know, she's still out there pulling honey out of the tree. And, you know, like you can find, like, they show you a scene at the very end where there's like a jar of honey, like next to the tree or something like that, with a note or something like that. It's like from the beach armor. And it's just, that's one of those movies that's just like, if you know you need to cry about something and you just can't do it, like that's the movie that's going to push you over the edge.
Absolutely.
It's just, like Evelyn's part in it, and learn, you know, like there's so many parts of that movie that just make you want to cry. It's amazing.
Definitely. Very emotional. And it's some of the scenes can be quite confronting, especially the, like the abuse and the racism and all of that. But, you know, that's how it was back then, you know, and it's important to watch films like this and realize this is what was going on. And this is, it's good to see how people dealt with it differently, you know, and it doesn't matter what time you're in, and, you know, it's all, you know, no matter how oppressed or challenged that woman was, she was able to always be herself and stand up to these horrible men. And it's, it's a great message, I think, in the film. And it's just a great film. It's funny, it's sad, it's dramatic. It's got everything. It's something for everything, something for everybody in that movie. Yeah. It's very good.
All the girlfriends, you know what I mean? Like the best girlfriends who are, here comes the kid. What are you doing?
Hello.
So yeah, the just how they're such amazing friends, and how they laugh so hard that they're crying, and they're like, you know, having a food fight and throwing, you know, flour at each other when Iggy's trying to make fried green tomatoes and they're terrible. And it's just, you know, it makes you wanna be friends with those characters.
For sure. They're just very likable, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, I just love that. I love that those relationships. And I mean, if it's not obvious by my three movies, you know, like I'm a big fan of like movies about people's relationships, you know, from Wayne's World all the way through. Like that's my favorite thing, is like the friendships and the relationships between the people, and how it makes you feel like you're one of the gang when you watch these movies. You're in
Absolutely,
it.
yeah. I can see that theme, that common theme in all your movies now, actually, now that you put it that way. Yeah, that's really cool. Very cool. And we could go on talking forever, I think, Jana, but unfortunately, all good things come to an end, and we're almost at the end of the podcast now, and it's been a great chat and really good to hear your perspective on these films. And just in wrapping up, I like to throw this question out sometimes around, the future of movies. Is there more types of movies you'd like to see? Because obviously, movies like we've talked about today, they don't really make them like that anymore, as they say, so seeing more of those kind of films made, or is there any films you want to see less of? Like, yeah, what are your thoughts on that? Any ideas?
I mean, most of the movies that I've seen relatively recently are movies made for kids, because I have three small kids.
Of course, yeah.
But I really love the trend with kids' movies, especially like the Pixar movies that have been coming out, and it that they, you know, yes, they're intended for kids, but those movies are 100% written for adults who got messed up as a kid. And you know, like there's all these underlying themes of like breaking generational trauma and like healing and apologizing to kids and teaching kids about you know, emotions and relationships and how to take care of each other and what's really important. And it's no longer like, you know, some creep is coming out of the woodwork and kissing Sleeping Beauty while she's asleep. You know, like that's not the movie that's happening anymore. So
No, not anymore.
I just, I love that. Even with like remakes that they're making, and you know, people are always up in arms like, oh, the Little Mermaid can't be black. I'm like, she's a mermaid, who cares? You know, like she
So
should
what?
be. That's great. You know, like, you know, why wouldn't you want, you know, a little black girl to be able to see a movie where the main character looks like her? Why wouldn't you want that?
Exactly.
You know, like who says, you know? And I'm like, meanwhile, you know, the entire plot of The Little Mermaid is like terrible, you know. If everybody's so magic, why can't the dude become a mermaid and go live in her world? You know,
Yeah,
like
turn
why
it
does she
around.
have to give up her whole life and her family to go live in his world,
Exactly.
including her ability to sing, you know, just so she can like chase after this guy? You know, like they're not making those movies anymore. And
No.
I love that. I love that the movies that my kids are watching are inadvertently teaching them those things. They're teaching them how to name their emotions and what they do, you know, by watching Inside Out.
Oh,
And
yeah.
it's, you know, teaching them about,
Masterpiece. Yeah.
you know, from Encanto, it's all about healing the generational trauma, and also
Yeah.
about knowing that you have inherent worth just by being a person, not because of what you have to offer. And you know, that those movies are being made, and that the people making those movies are really being intentional
Yes, it's great.
about building that kind of stuff. And I was just talking about this the other day, that a friend of mine brought this up, that way back in the day when the very first phone slash internet lines were being put up, and they were only used for armies and countries to communicate with each other, governments to communicate with each other, right?
That's right.
That there were people whose job it was to go out and hang these wires, and they had no idea what they were for. That was just their job, to go do that, right? And in the same way that they were building the infrastructure for this world that we live in now, when they had no idea what this world would ever be like, and they would never experience it, that the world that we are in right now, we're building the infrastructure for a whole different type of emotional communication and way of living, where people actually give a shit about each other.
Yeah,
And
that's great.
we're building that right now, whether we know it or not.
That's so
And
true,
like
yeah.
our kids are gonna live in that world, and they're gonna look back and be like, can you believe we used to have a world where people didn't do that? where people didn't care about each other, where people weren't working in communities, they weren't taking care of each other. And so I love that we're like, you know, we're those the people at Pixar who are writing those movies for our kids right now are those wire hangers, right? Yeah. They're hanging the wires.
Yeah.
So props to Keisha for coming up with that. My friend Keisha Patterson for coming up with that idea. And I
It's a great way to look at it. Yeah, really great way to look at it and understand it, that the work that's happening now, it might not always be, you know, interpreted the right way, or like we kind of take it for granted. But yeah, it is setting up this future. And you're so right, those Pixar films, like the creative people behind those films are just geniuses, you know. And I can't wait for Inside Out 2, because you've got the character of Anxiety now, and that's gonna it's not shying away from the fact that anxiety is, you know, through the roof pretty much on a global level, and kids are experiencing it at a younger age than ever before. So let's explore that in a responsible way, but also make it entertaining and not shame it, you know, not make it a shameful thing. So that's really responsible of them. And I can't wait to see that film and take my daughter to watch it and talk about it with her as well. It's going to be great.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I grew up with ADHD, but had no idea I had it. I grew up with anxiety and didn't know I had it until I was an adult, because I didn't have those movies. I didn't have that language, and people didn't see little girls as having ADHD. It was only little hyperactive boys, right? Because of movies like that and posts on the internet and things like that, like I got to have that language, and now I know that all of my kids already know what anxiety is, and my oldest is only 9 years old, you know. I'm like, I think that's amazing that they know what it is, they know how to name it, and they know that it's something that's normal for people, and it's not something to be ashamed of, and that people can talk about their mental health now and not be worried they're gonna get fired from a job and whatnot. Exactly. Like it's a very different world already, even in the last 5 years.
Oh, in particular, absolutely.
Very different.
Absolutely, so. Yeah. And you know, and it's great that there's movies coming out that are helping to with that movement, you know, really progressive, forward thinking kind of movies and stories. And yeah, I hope we see more of those as well. I think that's something really great to look forward to and really promote, is more movies like that, and get out there and watch those films. And, you know, if anyone's sick of sort of predictable, cliched films with the same formula, there's a whole other world of movies out there. And, you know, you've introduced us to a few of them today. So thank you. And Jana, this has been a fantastic conversation. Really, really great to hear all your different ideas and themes and issues about these films. And you know, we've had a good laugh about Wayne's World, and we've talked about some more sort of serious stuff as well. So thank you very much for being a guest on My Movie Story. It's been a pleasure.
I'm glad to come on and be able to talk about my favorites.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, and take care. Good to see you.
Yeah, have a good one.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning into My Movie Story. We hope you enjoyed today's episode with our special guest and the movies that we talked about. Don't forget to hit that like button, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and follow us on Spotify or your favourite podcast platform. Your support means a lot to us. You can also stay connected with us on social media for all the latest updates and special content, and you'll find our page on Facebook. Until next time, take care and enjoy the movies. See you on the next episode.